Here.
Commissioner David Atner.
Here.
Commissioner Kate Lanto.
Here.
Commissioner Tom Merrick.
Here.
Okay, so first item is review and approval of March 13th, 2023, regular session meeting minutes. It was a while ago, so I don't know if anybody has anything to add, offer. If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
I move to approve.
I'll second it.
Can we go through names, or can we just take it?
Yeah, just do it all.
Yeah, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, no names, any extensions? Item number two, update discussion on capital improvement projects. Lee, looks like you're up.
So I can start.
Don't worry, you watch Monday Night Football.
Do we have the scroll?
Yeah. Is this just for the TV, or will the scroll also?
It might scroll as well, please.
We used to have a.
Later.
You could click through it, yeah.
Lee, you say next slide.
Okay, all right, thank you. Okay, so thank you. So we'll start off with our well rehab. So this is just gonna be a recap of where we've gotten this fiscal year. This is kind of the end of the fiscal year for us here. We're wrapping it up, and I'll just run through, starting with our wells, our capital projects that we've been working on this year. And so, starting with our well rehabs, we've done well D1, which included pulling the old pump. And this particular well had not been pulled for almost 20 years. So this was a really good well. The pump performed really well over the course of those years. We didn't see very much decline in our pumping capacity. And so when we pulled it, it was because it was just that time, and we had already gone through our system, and this was one of the last wells to do. So we pulled this well, replaced it with a new pump. We pulled the motor as well, and we had that rehab, just because at that time, you know, it makes sense. So you're pulling the motor, it's out of commission. We take it up to one of our vendors in Phoenix. They replaced the bearings, they inspect it, and then they give us a refurbished motor. That same motor, refurbished. On this particular well, we did a gyroscope as well. I'm sorry, not this one, it was C6, we did the gyroscope one. So we had some concern about the well itself, but it turned out the deviation on that well was very good. It was almost, less than
couple inches,
yeah. It was right on, yeah, it was right on the money. I'll get to that here soon, but so we did that rehab. We brush and baled it. It was typically what we do every year with our wells. This well or C6 didn't have any issues with the casings, so the casings didn't have to be
packed.
So we didn't have to do any patching.
Switch.
Switch. Yeah. I think that's a term that the contract was using, right?
It's one that they came up with years ago, an outfit out in California, I can't remember their names. They actually admitted that process.
Switch patching.
Yeah, switch patching.
So what it is if there's they find a protrusion or something, erosion or corroding of the casing of the metal casing. And we see some of the formation coming in, we'll go in there and we'll patch it. And so this, fortunately, we didn't have to do that on either of these wells. And so we're back up and going. I think C6 is still in process. I think we have a new well. Oh, we have a new wellhead fabrication, or being for well C6 as well, added for D1. So those are both completed, just C6 needs to be installed then. Right?
Sure.
Nakoma Sky, so this is one that, this has been ongoing here for some time now. This is working with our partners with La Posada. They are the property owners that deed this parcel to us for the well, for the purpose of the well. They are bringing in electrical now, that's been kind of the big hangup. Our plans are 100% complete, including our control panel design, our SCADA for our SCADA controls and everything. The electrical is, the contractor is incurred in bringing in the electric to our junction box there, and then we're gonna pick it up there and bring it into the well. We've actually applied and we've received our approval to construct our ETCs through ADQ, I'm sorry, PDQ. So hopefully this coming fiscal year, we'll be ready to go. We're starting to put the bid package together and put that out to our contractors. So that'll be going here shortly, hopefully sometime shortly after July, August in the time period. And by this time next year, hopefully that well site is gonna be equipped. And that's a good producer, that well, I think we pumped it at almost 1100 GPM, but I think we're looking at about 850. Yeah, it's a good producer. Next slide. So the next well is a steam pump well. This one we also drilled right around the same time we drilled the Nakoma Sky. This is also 100% well, the design, the civil mechanical portion of it, the electrical portion, we need to complete that. It's just basically a drop. We have power there off of Oracle Road, just working with ADOT and getting the DEP, getting the electrical service to the property, which shouldn't be a big deal. So that's moving forward. And we're working, I think we'll be working with our Historical Society on a perimeter wall. They have a special facade that they'd like to look at for that particular property. Something that won't necessarily match what they're doing, but it'll kind of be separate and we'll be able to have some display explaining to the public what it is and what the purpose of that well is and how it relates to the steam pump well. Or the steam pump part.
They asked us to try and make it look less industrious. So.
Industrious.
Another thing I'd like to add is on both Nakoma Sky and steam pump, for the first time when we constructed these wells, it's used a stainless steel well casing and stainless steel screens in lieu of carbon steel. So hoping better life, a lot more life and less maintenance.
So why the switch then?
Carbon steel, it corrodes, it gets rusty and it requires more maintenance, brushing and baling to break off the scales so you can keep up the production of the well. All indications are with stainless that won't happen.
So it's the premium, sorry.
Pay a little more, but you should get a lot more life and less of an element cost on the well, but time will tell.
Yeah, and we suspect too that there could be some issues. Historically, I think the metallurgy in some of the steel, the older steel seems to last a lot longer than some stuff maybe more recent, And so I think we've seen that with some of our newer wells and probably like 80s, 90s. But prior to that, some of those wells are holding up really well, the casings. But I think, like Peter said, stainless steel, I think is for a little extra money, you're going to get a lot more life out of it. And even our gravel pack, I think we're looking at in the future going through glass beads too, which is a more consistent gravel pack. So this is the Palisades redundant. This was just a design this year. So the purpose of this project here is to connect. And I added this extra slide here, so you can kind of see. This is Silver Hawk here. This is Silver Hawk. This is where we're going to start. So it's roughly here, kind of where this tower is. But we're going to kind of go between the common area and connect to the Catalina Shadows neighborhood. And the reason this subdivision and all these homes here are fed by a single line. So if anything were to ever happen to that line, you know, we would leave a lot of folks out of water. So what we're trying to do is prevent that. So when Silverhawk came in, that subdivision was completed, we decided just to do a quick in-house design to provide some redundancy there to allow for, you know, to win in the future.
And looping the system.
And looping the system, too. You know, we're going to be eliminating two dead ends, which also improves the water quality and less maintenance for our crews to have to go out and flush dead ends. That, that's 100% design, and we actually got the bid in from the contractor, and that's actually under our estimate for what's almost done. Right. So this here is another one of the redundant projects that we had in-house. I'm sorry, we went out to contract with this, but there were some issues that we had. So we're going to push this project probably into next year and look at doing a PRV drop to help feed. And I should have added another slide here, which shows the El Conquistador subdivision, which includes all the homes north of El Conquistador, as well as the ones up above. And it's the same situation here where we have a single feed coming in El Conquistador.
That's off of Oracle, right?
That's off of Oracle. Yeah, off of Oracle, going right to the resort and to the communities, to the homes in that area, and surrounding the golf courses. So the idea there is to be able to also provide some redundancy in the event that we need. This is our countryside wheeling station. This is an existing wheeling station that we have currently with Tucson Water. We wheel in water from Tucson Water. It's actually our water from the Aber Valley that we wheel in through Tucson Water. It's currently at 100 GPM. Peter went to Tucson Water and asked for an increase to 300 GPM. And the reason for that is because we have two wells at Countryside that service that whole area. And in the event that we have an issue, one well goes down, you know, in the middle of the summer, July, we want to have that ability to service the whole community and not have to, you know, cut back on, you know, any conservation or any services that we would provide, including fire or things like that. So this is another in-house design that we're wrapping up here.
And that'll be, will that be in the right-of-way, like Oracle and Hardy?
This will be in the right-of-way off of, Camino Sumner?
Camino de Oeste.
Camino de Oeste and Sumner. Yeah, Sumner.
It will have SCADA? Or?
This will have telemetry, yes, this will have SCADA. So David will be able to remotely control the site.
Yeah, and history of you're interested on that site. So those two wells in the Countryside, we lost the pump in one of them. It was like in the first week I came to work at Oral Valley. Yeah, isn't that how it always goes? You know? And it was, I think, the bigger of the two.
Yes,
so
true.
We were really through for water out there. So, and you may remember this, Peter, but went to talk to my friends at Tucson Water and said, hey, you guys are right there. Can we just put a temporary, you know, at that time it was just a temporary emergency connection. So that original station, that's what that was. Oh, okay. It was just that's why it wasn't built to any standards or anything. We did it real quick and got it up and running within a day or two.
And right now we basically just have a meter on it, but yeah, you know, there's, here again, our concern was two sources of supply. They're older sources of supply, and you know, fortunately, because of the years of experience we've had with the system, Tucson Water had a lot of data. They saw they had some extra shoulder capacity. So, you know, bumping it up from 100 GPM to 300 GPM, that's a huge deal for us. And then, of course, we're modernizing it, but
yeah,
as it should have been.
Thanks. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then that wheeling station, the way it is today, it really does serve the purpose, and it does benefit the countryside a lot, even today, you know, but that's 20 plus years.
Right.
Temporary.
That's how those things go.
So that would be the word. So we hope to get go to the construction. So that's another one that we're hoping to go to construction to here in new fiscal year. This is another one that we just recently replaced the HP tanks at Rancho Vistoso. So Rancho Vistoso serves the Sun City area. It's a closed system, so it's served by boosters. We have the Sun City booster and the Rancho Vistoso booster. We're looking at changing the design. It's not going to be on a skid mount, but it's going to be the higher efficiency vertical multi-stage centrifugal pumps, which you kind of see there. That's why I wanted to share this picture. So we don't use these. I don't think we have any in our system currently. And these are a more efficient pump. You know, I think Dave's worked with them, and he likes them. I've worked with them, and I like them. The big deal here is that we're looking at seeing a significant cost savings in our energy. You know, that's a big deal. So yes, the idea is to model this with Sun City, so we'll have both of those sites completely done. This year we're currently in the process of getting those HP tanks replaced at Sun City. So essentially we'll have, by hopefully this time next year, we'll have two new booster sites, both Sun City and Rancho Vistoso, with these newer, higher efficiency pumps. Yeah, and here's a photo of Sun City. This is the booster site servicing the Sun City area. And this will be completed this fiscal year, the HP tanks. And then next year, we'll be replacing the horizontal section of the pumps here that you see here. These ones here with those vertical muffler stage. So hopefully we can report by this time next year, too, some maybe energy costs, because we're looking at that wire to water, what that looks like. That's kind of a big deal for us. I mean, just another photo in the shop, the fabrication of the HP tanks, and the inspectors go down, kind of throughout the process to make sure that, you know, our ports are where they're supposed to be, and the coatings, they check the mill thicknesses on the coatings in the interior and exterior, make sure that they meet our standards for effect.
Because of the safety improvements we made in terms of accessing the tank?
Sure. You know, one of the biggest improvements we made are these manways here to allow us to get inside these versus the end. I mean, the guy squeezed in.
In the old days, you'd pick the smallest person and, like, just throw them in the end. And
just say good luck.
Bring your kids to work.
And bear in mind, these are small tanks. A lot of times the tanks are a lot bigger, so this should be a good improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this will allow us to not only, like Peter says, you know, safety for our staff to get in there and inspect it, but to inspect it on a more regular basis, because, you know, really...
So want to inspect it?
Well, you know, there's really no reason why these couldn't last, you know, beyond our life, you know, if we're maintaining them, right? We're going in there, we're accessing, we're inspecting them on a regular basis. You know, we spent a significant amount of money to have these built, constructed, and installed. Now it's just more now maintaining that asset, and that's what we're trying to get to, that point where, and a lot of them, the RHP tanks were good tanks, but they weren't ASA certified. So that's also our goal too, as the safety features that Peter mentioned. In addition to the hatches and some of the ports and things like that, that we'll be able to do some additional monitoring.
And if they fail the safety hazard, they can do a lot of damage.
They can do a lot of damage. Yeah. Fine. The neighbors are active.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Take out walls. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we need pretty. So here's another project that we have in design this year. This is the La Cañada 2-zone booster site that's going to be located at the La Cañada Reservoir, a 3 million gallon reservoir. This is a 2-zone. This is going to be we're going to be pumping to the F and to the G zone from this site. This is going to also be a site where we're going to be delivering some of our NORS water, which is going to be part of one of the other supplies coming up. The intermediate 4-bay, where we'll be pumping into directly into our E zone. And the E zone is going to push it all the way into La Cañada. to the reservoir. From there, we'll boost it out to the FNG zone. So this is 100% completed, our design, I'm sorry. And we're going to have to go up. This is going to be a significant project here in terms of dollars. We'll go out and put this out on the public for bid in this new fiscal year in 2023-24. And so, you know, so this is the North project here. This is the one that's going to be pushing that water into the La Cañada reservoir and then being boosted out to the FNG zone through the E zone. But you can see here, this is Shannon Road, this is Naranja, this is Ironwood High School, this is St. Mark's here off of Tangerine.
Okay.
We're going to be located kind of not quite midway, but a little bit less. And our booster is going to be on a 2-acre parcel here with two discharge lines, the 16th going north to Tangerine, and then 16 coming south to Naranja. And we'll pump it through the system into the La Cañada booster. Directly to our service or department residents. This is just an architect's rendition of what it will look like. This is kind of a view after it's constructed. This is a before, kind of what it looks like. This is part of that area that State Trust Land 2-acre parcel that we were able to acquire from the state several years ago, and now we're. We're about 100% designed and ready for construction.
So the discharge will go north and south?
The two lines will go north. So we'll have a line coming south, you know, another line going north.
They're both north. What it was originally we thought we were going to need to construct a pipeline from here to La Cañada Reservoir. But after we modeled it, we realized that we ran two pipelines because Naranja and Tangerine are both E-zone.
Okay.
And we didn't have to construct another transmission pipeline to La Cañada. We're able to utilize the existing system and just use La Cañada as a high water.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking I didn't remember that. Yeah, they're both in the same
zone. Yeah.
That's a good point because originally, and that was a significant savings. We found not only in our design but in our construction. We're talking what over
several million dollars, several
miles. Of you know, not having to acquire any sort of right of way or impact any roads along, because this would essentially got a Shannon Road all the way to Moore Road, and then kind of cross Moore to.
You know, let's make a note is maybe our next meeting is let's provide like a system schematic, and I think if we show an overview of how we're moving water through the system, you can see the real benefits to what we're doing.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Right now, because you're so zoomed in, it's hard to get the context. Right. Yeah. Now, I don't even know if you have a system, but.
So on this particular project, we're scheduled to have an open house with the neighbors. We've sent out notices, and that'll be at the Ironwood High School. It's our main.
2 weeks?
Is it 2 weeks? Week or
2 weeks? Okay, yeah, I think that sounds about right.
To kind of show some of the, we'll have the plans. We'll have some displays and you know, our contractor will be there. Because this is a design build. We'll have our contractor, designers there, our staff.
And we commissioned a public...
Public Information Office.
Yeah,
Canine.
Yeah, you know, just because we realize the sensitivity of the area, so we've been in discussion with the neighbors, you know, that live along Shannon alignment. So we've been working with them and kind of explain to them what the project's going to look like when it's completed.
Is this your first design build? Or
yes.
So
what that means is, you know, there's different delivery methods for contracting. You have design bid build, which is very traditional. We have job work contracts, which we use for smaller projects, or in larger projects where there's maybe a lot of, I don't know if these are the right words, and Alan, you can help me out here. If there's a lot of uncertainty, maybe a lot of owner risk, or just uncertainty, there's another contracting delivery method called design build, where early on you work with an engineering consultant and a contractor to do the, and the owner, to do the design, and then they give you guaranteed maximum price, right, at GMP?
Yeah.
And they say, hey, because the contractor was involved with the design, they're very intimate with it, and they give you a price that you don't have to accept, right? We don't have to accept that. We could go bid it if we wanted to. But there, on this project, there was quite a bit of uncertainty in the contractor, the engineers felt, and the utilities spent a lot of time. So, yeah, it was the first for us to go with the design build.
And we did have some value engineering in there, too. So we have a really detailed cost sheet. I mean, they break it down.
Yeah, it's
almost 250
line items. Yeah.
I mean, but they give us, you know, you get a good sense of what things are costing and what, you know, labor costs are, you know, long lead time items that are critical to this project are going to be, and then the cost of those items.
And you don't get that with traditional design bid or build. Mm-hmm. It's
whatever.
This is called open book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they show you everything, and you negotiate everything.
So,
but in design bid build, they just give you a price, and you either take it or leave it.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to add here, too, really quick, is, you know, you can notice, and you notice this desert. It's a very healthy desert. We're working with the Tucson Cactus and Succulent Society to help us rescue as many of the, especially the saguaros. There's quite a few saguaros out there. I think they estimate over 100, you know, from varying sizes. So what we'll be able to do is we're working with our parks folks, and we're going to try to relocate as many as we can to the Naranjal Park, as well as to other places within the town, and then of course the rest of the society will rescue those other ones, and then we'll locate some on site as well.
Have you had any feedback from the neighbors yet at all about the project, or is this the first time they're hearing about it?
I have it. It's mostly been positive. One is because of the possibility of having fire hydrants they didn't have before. Also having, I think a lot of them like the idea of having a source of supplies so close, mm-hmm. that, because they're all on private wells right now.
Mm-hmm.
And almost without exception, they've asked, well, if we run into a problem with our well, is this a source of supply for us? And it is. So that kind of gave us like the thumbs up.
I mean, some of the questions that we've had out in the field are, you know, we have access, because there's folks that like to ride their horses or walk, you know, through through Shedden Road or through the Arizona State Trust Line there. You know, there's trails out there. We're going to provide that access so that they can, you know, and secure our site so they can continue to, you know, recreate in those areas. Quite a bit of design this year, so next year's going to be real heavy on the construction side of things. So I look forward to presenting that. That's exciting stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Lee? Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.
So we can move on to 3, update and discussion on water utility financials.
All right.
Okay, Mary.
Yeah. So unfortunately, Mary wasn't doing well today. She called me sick. So I'll be updating the commission on the financials. So we start looking at our revenues, and this is our financial update, you know, from July 1st until the end of April. So we still have May and June. So we have 2 more months to go through. But overall, you know, on the revenue portion, we're projecting about a $1.1 million shortfall, and it's really because of just the tremendous wet fall, winter, and spring we've had. You know, when we have these wet seasons, from a water resource perspective, when I have my water resource hat on, I'm like, yes, and then I put my financial hat on, and I'm like, no. But you know, looking at the potable water sales, we think we're going to have a shortfall of about $900,000. And same with reclaimed water, you know, when there's all that great hydrology, the turf customers, they don't order as much from that. That's a cost savings for turf customers. Of course, groundwater preservation fees will drop down a little bit because they're based on water sales. Our service fees, you know, which really aren't based on the volume of water we sell, but that's pretty much fixed. We met the budget on that. So our revenues are projected to be, let's say, $1.1 million less than what we projected. Looking at the expense side of things, fortunately, I have with some good luck so far here to date, and because I have a great operations and engineering team that, you know, Mary provides us with updates every month on how we're doing on revenues and expenses. And it wasn't like come April, we were like, oh my God, we're going to have a $1 million short. We saw the shortfall in September, October. And what we do is, you know, the staff, we start making adjustments where we can on expenses. If there's something like we had budgeted, but maybe it's not, you know, mission critical to put off the next fiscal year, we can. So we make adjustments along the way. And additionally, what we had done this year is we had budgeted for main breaks. I don't know what we budgeted. Is it $150,000? And I don't think we haven't had a plan, but where it's tiny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's got a big program, John.
Yeah. So, you know, there's things. So one thing we've been doing is we've been budgeting things like main breaks because we want to track, you know, how much we spend every year on main breaks. But fortunately, we did. I'm going to jinx myself. We got 2 months to do it. Unfortunately, I haven't had any big ones, so there's a cost taken there. So, moral to the story is our expenses, you know, we think we're going to be about $1.1 million down on expenses, best to try to help balance out the revenue shortfall. So, and some of it's just good luck, too. So, personnel, we're going to be below by about 100,000. Just our vacancy savings. We've had some retirements, some resignations. And what we do is we don't automatically just knee-jerk react, quick fill a position. David, Lee, Mary, and myself will evaluate the position. You know, do you really need that person? Because we've implemented a lot of technology. So, you know, sometimes there's been that instance where it's like, you know what, you really don't need that person there, but maybe you need them somewhere else, you know, in the organization. Or let's just see how we run, you know, 3 or 4 months without that person. So, and then there's, of course, if you need someone right away, there's a hiring process, so that position might be vacant for, you know, a month or two. So we have some vacancy savings. O&M has done a great job of really looking after their expenses. So it's, and like the main breaks thing I discussed, we expect those costs, the actuals, to come in about $1 million below what we budgeted. Capital, we haven't spent a lot right now, but we haven't received it. And all the notices of receipts are done, but construction has been done. We're just not realizing the actuals yet as of April because we haven't received the invoicing. But even when we do expect to see the invoicing, we expect to have about $250,000 in carry forward the next fiscal year. And our debt service, we pay that at the beginning of the fiscal year, so that's already paid for. Expenses are less than what we projected, and that's good because the revenues are also less than what we projected. Just a customer service update. Last year at this time, we had sold 148 meters. We're up to 160 meters. Our customer base has grown. We're just over 21,000 customers or connections. Water audits, this is what our water conservation specialist performs for folks if they have high consumption or they just want to know if they're using water efficiently. We'll perform the water audit for them. So down a little bit, that's compared to this time last year, no particular reason why, just a form of fluctuation. We still continue to get registered users on our WaterSmart, so that's good to know of the a little over 21,000 customers, a little over 7,000 customers are registered. And according to WaterSmart, that's a fantastic percentage, but we continue to work to get that number increasing. And then our customer service portal, we implemented a new customer service interface, SpryPoint. It's our first year, so we don't have any historical data, but just from August to now, we're up to 7,300 registered users on that, which is like amazing. So what that tells us is our customers really like that customer service interface. They're using it. They like the methods they have to pay and the information that it provides. And that completes my discussion on financials. Any questions?
Yeah. Just want to make a comment. In past years, I guess no one really around, but in past years we would always get scrutiny because the budget numbers, we would always hit, you would always hit the revenue, everything. Every month you could see this trend because the weather was very predictable, but this is the first year where we actually have that. So just for everybody's edification, when the weather changes, sometimes you miss. But I don't know if you remember the discussions from previous years where people were like, you guys always seem to hit the number.
And also some years, if it's super hot, like it picked up 2 or 3 years ago, we had a hot one and our revenues were up. So, in the end, like, it all balances out. It doesn't worry me too much, especially when I have a team that I have that's sensitive to these kinds of things and works with you to keep a balanced budget. So, thank you.
Well, and Peter, when sales are down, that also means you're not having to pump as much water, so that
power costs are down, chemical costs are down.
Yeah, there's trade-offs all along.
So I got a general question. So you may be a little below a million in terms of current deficit, maybe a little above by the time the fiscal year is up. What's the mandate of an enterprise fund like the water utility? You have to make it up within a couple of years? How do you handle it?
So we do have a minimum cash reserve requirement. We always make sure we're well above that. But as long as I meet my cash reserve requirements, that's all I need. That's not like a regulatory requirement. It's a town code, or town policy.
Yep.
But we just make sure we stay above that. And, of course, the enterprise fund, we're supposed to be self-sustaining.
Right.
So it'd be a bad day for me if that wasn't the case.
If we suddenly have a huge monsoon for the next 3 years, are you going to have to make adjustments?
This year factors into, so when we do our rate analysis, we look at, we don't just say what was last year. We kind of start to average. This factors into the average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your targeted reserve on
this? Any other questions with respect to the financials year to date?
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
We do about 50,
Laurel Valley, and I think there's like seven in Countryside Rookie-Doo. Some of those are just backup stations. Some of them are just water quality monitoring. So we do periodically sample from them just to see the water quality, like in an area. And then we did, goals, as I get in here, I'll show you, we added some extra ones in there.
Excuse me, David. Does that include all the dead ends? You regularly sample?
No, we don't regularly sample the dead ends. We work a lot with engineering because we're working on how often do we need to flush these dead ends. So we've been sampling, and they've been running analysis on it, and then we'll come back and sample again and see what it is. But no, we don't regularly do because they get flushed.
Okay, thank you.
So additional core functions, we operate monitor our SCADA system for the potable and leachate systems. We do all of the AZZA when locates, that's going out locating our utilities whenever somebody's excavating. We work hand in hand with the customer service folks for new meter installs, rereads, customer inquiries, any other customer interaction that a field person needs to go out and take care of. And then we maintain the drinking water compliance sampling and reporting according with the EPA State Drinking Water Act and state. And then we work closely with other water utility groups, engineering, admin. So we're kind of a little family. So in our Water Operations Administration, which is me and our superintendent, Jeff Kane, we're still working on the SCADA upgrade to the eviction softwares I've talked about before. We're actually a little above 60% completion. Right now we're probably about almost 70. I had set a firm go live date for the vendor to be done in April 2023. We didn't make that date, so I moved it to get it done before June 1st. And moved the project to be done by June 30th. So we rescheduled our go-live to the end of May. Part of that problem is not the vendor's fault, it's our internal IT part. Because our SCADA system has to be so secure, and it has to be pretty much disconnected from the internet, but yet connected, it's kind of... So they're having some protocol issues, some IP issues with it, but they're working through them. But right now, the new SCADA system is taking in data. We are recording data. We can go in and see what it's doing. And now we've confirmed that we've set side by side with the existing SCADA system to make sure that what data is in there is what we're seeing is correct. Again, the major changes with this is faster login time, a lot easier graphics, and we'll have the true historian. It's nice now, we've been collecting data in there since February. And I can go in on one of the screens, now I can see. What I couldn't see in the other system was if when a pump turned on, how long it was on, because we didn't have those marked. Now I can go in there and see that. I can see the graph and say, oh, that thing ran for 20 minutes.
And that helps with troubleshooting. And
it's going to help with troubleshooting. It's going to help engineering with a lot of things that they look at for some of their designs or their upgrades. Again, reduce licensing costs. I think it's going to save us hugely after this year, because that right now we're paying for the existing system and the new system, so we'll see savings coming up on that. And then my favorite is Peter's getting director's view. They came in, they've been like measuring his shoulders, and they're measuring his office, and he's going to have a really nice view.
Well, it will allow right now only water operations at the production facility can see this data, and like right now in engineering, we're constantly calling, calling them and, hey, can you send us this? And now we'll have like a read only. We can look at the system.
Will we have access to the story?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you guys are gonna have access to. And I haven't seen that module yet. Is the customizable reporting? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It takes us to a whole new level.
But we're gonna have to write you a Bible on what all the tags are, so guys will know what you're looking at. Yeah. And again, what I had hoped for this meeting was, instead of having this screen up here, was to show you a live view of what it looks like, but we're not there. So hopefully by the next update, I'll replace this screen with that. But, once again, we're going from this look to more of an industrial look. So some of the water production groups activities, They coordinated this year annual reservoir inspections. We usually schedule about six reservoirs to be inspected. So what we do is we have a diving company out here. These guys are certified to dive in a portable water tank. They're wearing a completely self-contained suit. They actually have their street clothes on, and they put the suit on, and then they disinfect themselves with that before they can get in there. And then once they're in, they go in and they video everything in there, the walls, everything. They take still pictures, and then they go in and they actually vacuum it out. They actually have a vacuum, and it looks like they're vacuuming the floor. It's pretty neat. And then they'll provide us with a written report, any recommendations. They're also able to make small repairs. So if they see a little blister on the coating, they can grind that down and then patch it while it's without draining the reservoir. And some of our, and as I said before, with our Arizona Department of Corrections Inmate Work Program, that has been a huge program for us. And I mean, we got a lot done, and it has saved tremendous amounts of money. Some of the projects that they worked on since January is they went into the reclaimed site, they took all this pipe, and you can see that it's kind of oxidized. They repainted it, they repainted the concrete. This is Stone Canyon's lake feed. They did that one, and then this is the vault at the reclaim plant. So after the heavy rains and winter that we had, we got a lot of brush growth. You can see this side here where they came in, they brushed it, they cleaned it. You see before and after, it's just real valuable. They assisted our water quality department there in the wintertime. One of the things that we wanted to do was we were taking samples off of a little hose bib out the side of the pipe, which is not probably real good because contamination or whatever. So we installed dedicated sampling stations on each of the EPDS points so we know that we're getting accurate, true water quality readings. So we put in, they put in 13 of those for the wintertime.
Was that at the well sites?
Yeah, at the well sites, at the EPDS sites, at the point of distribution system. Then they also assisted with the D1 rehabilitation project we had. When the contractor went out, all of the conduits and electrical were on this side of the well casing, and they couldn't back their pump rig up. Kept it, so we had to relocate all that. And we looked at having the contractor come in and do it, and it was over $10,000 to do it. So we said, hey, we got a whole crew here. We can get them in there. They hand dug, they laid all that new conduit and new control boxes and everything in there. And we saved about 10 grand doing that.
They came out real nice.
They came out real nice.
Yeah, and they're great guys.
They moved the light pole that was in the way. So our water control systems group, it does all of our instrumentation control and controls. Out at Countryside, we have a portable generator that's on a trailer. If it rains and stuff out here, they have to actually manually hook into this port right here. And it's kind of dangerous. So one of the things that I've asked them to do is go in and take this manual transfer switch, which you have to put on like a V-suit, a big old heavy suit, to be able to open that cabinet up and do it because of the switch gear, because of the arc flash and the contacts are going together. So we have a contractor coming in and changing that out to one that automatically just switches over. And we're going to put the generator off the trailer onto a pad. And then it won't be automatic to the generator starting. We'll just have to go back out and start the generator. But once we do, it'll automatically switch everything.
And Countryside is our 1 square mile isolated system. And the thing here is the reason we need this generator backup is we don't have a high water reservoir such that if power goes out, it maintains system pressure. The reservoir here is actually on the lower side of Countryside, and we need a booster station to pressurize the system. And when we lose power, we need to have this generator kick in to provide backup power to this booster station. Yeah. So that's why this one, we identified this a year ago as one of a handful of critical sites where we're putting in generator backups. Thank you, Dave.
Then water distribution group has been busy. Right now, we have, I don't know if you guys can see this picture, it's not very good. Right here is a purple hydrant. I hooked onto the reclaim system. It's got a meter on it with a hose coming off. This is used for like the street sweeper, whatever, to come and use reclaimed water so they're not using potable water. Well, one of the things is it's on a hydrant. It shouldn't be on a hydrant. It should be a filling station. So we're actually removing these hydrants and building dedicated filling stations for them with a, where it's enclosed into a container, and then have a hose wrap on there. These meters are mechanical that's hanging off of there, and sometimes they're not real accurate. So we're able to put meters in that will read on AMI. So we don't have to have somebody come out manually read that. We'll be able to pick it up. Filling system can pick it up right away. And we can see if there's a leak or anything like that.
You keep track of who's pulling water. So
right now, the only ones that have access to that is Public Works.
Okay.
But we do, a contractor can get, would they be let a contractor use the filling station? Or would they be one
of those special end user agreements?
We'd probably have to have some kind of agreement, and then we'd probably put Public Works off of it and put a contractor on it. We'd always keep that as an option.
And I think for the contractor, it's more of a convenience. You know, sometimes it's easier to put them to pull off closer to their job site rather than, because we only have, I think, about two of them.
Three. We've got three of them. We have this one here is in front of the reclaim facility, and then there's one right in front of La Cunada.
Ronda Park.
And then there's one in Ronda Park.
Yeah, they got more
than that. But we'll be able to monitor with it, with that AMI capability, we'll be able to monitor what's going on with it. This is the 4-inch. This is the main that we've had repaired just a couple weeks ago. It's 4-inch main lined up in La Reserve. It's on a dead-end street. But what ended up happening is, you can see right here, this is the saddle that's capped on the pipe. So, I mean, for those that don't know, that's how you get water out of the pipe to your house, and it has a service line that goes up. That point failed on the old pipe, it caused a leak in there. So the crews come in, they dig it up, they'll cut all that bad pipe out, they'll put a new piece in there, they'll put a whole new tap and whole new service in there with it. And then of course we have to come back and do an asphalt patch and everything. So hopefully that was our big one for the year. For water meter operations activities, they're still working on our water meter warranty changeout. The manufacturer's water meters had a bad batch in about 2014, and they have a 10-year warranty on them. And they're starting to slowly die off at a quicker rate than I want, but right now we can get the warranties on them down next year. Since January, we did 300 of them. We had everybody out doing them. That way, at least we're still, so we can measure water. Peter spoke earlier about Spry Point, the new CIS system. What's good about that is not only can the customer service staff use it, but our meter staff can use it too. So if they go out and they change out or reprogram a meter, in the old days it was a piece of paper, and you got to switch it over to somebody over here so they can change out the account. Our staff can now do it in real time right out the field to make those changes. For our water quality group, we're still working on the SAMS water compliance portal part of it. This is updated screenshots of it, so you can see now we have mapping on it where we can see a map and pinpoint where all of our sample stations are, or sampling points in Oro Valley are. It has a complete admin menu here that we can go in and look at imported stuff, failed imports. We can manage the laboratory data. So with this, the sampling schedule will now be auto-generated, and our supervisor will be able to assign different technicians a place that he wants to go, and then they can monitor it in real time when they get the samples and make sure that we're staying on time and compliance. Results will be imported directly from the laboratory instead of it coming in on a piece of paper and us looking at it and transferring it over to the Excel spreadsheet. It'll automatically update the database. And then a Eventually, we'll have the ability to report compliance directly to the EPA, bypass the state, bypass the county, and thereby bypassing any error that we get from the state, the county, which we've had our share of. So we're really excited about that. That's what I got.
Steven, good. Thank you.
Questions.
Thank you.
Very good.
I guess we can move on to water resources.
Well, we're going to see firsthand in a graphical representation here that reduction in our revenue. Uh-huh. So this is, we're looking at the first quarter of 2023. We're looking at our water resource usage for January, February, and March. And we're comparing it to from 1999 all the way to 2023. Dark blue represents groundwater, purple is reclaimed water, and green is CAP water. So here we are, first quarter of 2023. Groundwater usage is the second lowest as it's been. I don't go all the way to 1996, but I'm pretty confident that's the second lowest usage that utilities ever had of groundwater pumping. So that's excellent from a water resource perspective. CAP wheeling usage, you know, that stays pretty much constant. We baseload our CAP at our four wheeling stations. And then, of course, because of the improved the wet hydrology we had the first quarter, you know, turf customers just didn't order as much reclaimed water. Similarly, you know, Countryside is similar. Of course, you know, Countryside doesn't receive reclaimed water. We don't have any turf customers there. Our reclaim system is nowhere near there also. So we just have two sources of supply, groundwater and our CAP water. And that consumption is reflective of the better than average or the wetter than normal hydrology we've had. So any questions with respect to... Yeah. I took this picture here of Catalina State Park. And every year, when the snow's melting and the wash is running, my son and I, we walk here, then we walk down to see. It's just magical to see the water just disappear into the ground. And then we'll go off to the side, maybe 50 feet where it's dry, and just start digging. And then we go down about a foot, 2 feet, and there's the water again. So kind of a neat lesson to show how a well works and aquifers work. But and we just had that pass the hydrology. This wash has been running for like, I swear, 4 months, just like this. Anyways, any questions with respect to our water resource usage in the first quarter?
Your use of term baseloading for the cap, it's kind of a term that suggests you don't compromise that. You take what you're allocated and you just keep charging.
For example, the rate at which we receive that resource is not based on any demand we're seeing. It's, for example, at Countryside right now, 100 gallons a minute every minute, 7 days a week, 365 days. All our wheeling stations just are a steady flow. Yeah. And we're able to do that because we have the reservoir capacity. You know, at night they fill up and then the reservoirs drop during the day. But you know, water operations utilizes groundwater really just to ensure that the reservoirs stay at an operational level. You know, I mean, if it was actually of such a demand that we didn't need to pump any groundwater, we wouldn't, right? They'd go in that pretty much how you use your wells just to make up for what CAP can't.
Yeah. CAP runs first.
Yeah. Right. So that's what I mean by base load, it's just constant.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Item 6, discussion possible action on cancellation of June and July water utility commission meetings. That's kind of standard practice.
Standard practice was typically like June or July. Okay. One of the things I've noticed is, you know, we're pretty busy with budget and rates in June. And right now, you know, the summer kind of tends to slow down with respect to a lot of action. So Usually we're grasping at straws to report on those months. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to get all the quorum because the commissioners want to go on vacations too. So, of course, you know, if something groundbreaking or monumental happened, you know, we could always convene the commission or I would email the commission on updates. But, yeah, we respectfully requesting that if we take June and July off, it just gives us a little break and then also gives us time for hopefully something to happen on the Colorado Riverfront. First of all.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, personally, we're here for you. So if,
yeah, I appreciate
if you don't feel that you need, you know, that support during that time, if it gives you more time to do what you need to do.
Yeah,
traditionally we've kind of struggled to fill that one meeting with content. Yeah. And it's, the summer meeting's always very short.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it just, you know, but like I said, if something happens that we need to convene the commission, I would definitely look to do that, but I don't see that need because.
Do we need to around that? Or?
Yeah, I think we should just to memorialize it.
Yeah, so unless.
What do you need, a motion?
Yeah.
Make a motion to cancel the June and July meetings.
A second.
Any additional discussion? Anybody? Okay, hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. And any abstentions? So it's, yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you, everybody. May is our budget month, so we have the study sessions and detailed review of the budget coming up this week, Wednesday and Thursday, and then the budget needs to be released by, of course, by the end of June. So this week is really about detailed review of what's coming up for the next fiscal year. The council meeting this month is moved back to the 24th, if anyone's interested. Normally it would be on the 17th, 1st, and 3rd, but this month we're going to be meeting on the 24th. So if any of you are interested, you're not precluded from coming to council meetings just because you're at a commission meeting, but you don't have to. But it would be nice if you guys wanted to see the presentation on the water part of the budget, because that is an area of deep concern for the council, and there will be a lot of questions. So thank you, everybody, and a well-earned June and July meeting off, and see you guys in August, I guess.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, directors.
All right, so wrap it up. Councilor Bowen, did I miss a date here? I thought you said
24th.
Did you say June 24th?
Yeah.
Or I said June, that would have been a mistake. It would have been
no,
May
24th
is the next council meeting.
Instead of the 17th.
Instead of the 17th.
So there's an error on my part. Okay, so upcoming meetings. Like Councilor Bowen said, this week, May 10th and 11th, town council budget study session in council chambers at 5 o'clock. The water utility is slated to do, or we're slated to do our presentation on that second day. On the 11th, I think that's a Thursday. So then on May 24th, not the 17th, May 24th, town council regular session, council chambers at 6 p.m. And then June 7th of 2023,
town
council regular session, and this is where we have our public hearing on the proposed water rates. And this is in council chambers at 6 p.m. And then we just voted to cancel the June 12th and July 10th commission meetings. And we will meet again in this room on August 14th at 5 p.m. Looking at the, here again, while we locally had excellent hydrology, the southwestern states have also had excellent hydrology, in particular the upper basin states. This is a graph showing the upper Colorado Basin snowpack, and it's comparing it to other years. If you look at this green line here, this represents the median snowpack. This black line represents our current year, our 2020 the maximum that we've ever seen. And I don't remember what year that was. Might have been 2019. But anyways, we're having an excellent year. We're well above the curve. And it's not coming anytime too soon. Looking at just an overall plan view of the Upper Basin states, you can see we have these, well over 150%, or certainly well over 100% in certain areas of the Upper Basin states, and that's what's resulting in this better than average snowpack. I just received an article today. And while this is great news, this by no means, this is just a little relief as we do the work that needs to be done, which is really reallocating Colorado River. But it's here, this is from an article in the Star. This year's spring runoff in Lake Powell is set to be the highest since 2011. So it's kind of easing some of the pressure on us. But what's great is following three extremely dry years on the river, the April-July runoff in the Powell is now predicted by the Colorado River Basin Forecast Center to hit about 11.2 million acre feet. This is great. This is every indication that we could expect, and they're saying that the Bureau of Reclamation plans a 9.5 million acre feet release of Powell into Lake Mead. That's fantastic. That's 2 million acre feet more than what we only get the 9.5. We have an exceptionally wet year. So that's great news. And I thought this was very encouraging. Powell is now expected to end 2023 40 feet higher in water surface elevation than where it is today, and Mead is expected to rise nearly 20% compared to where it is today. Now, this doesn't mean it's put on the party lights, it's time to go. No, we still have to do all the same work. There's been some proposals. I hear that a consensus proposal of all seven basin states has been made and been presented to the Bureau of Reclamation. I'm not privy to, or none of my colleagues are privy to, what that proposal looks like. But as soon as we hear and get anything of substance, I'll let this commission body know. But, the river does need to be reallocated. I think there needs to, in my opinion, the pay needs to be spread in a prorated fashion amongst all the users. And a wet year like this just, helps. We were in a bad situation until this winter, so this is really good news. But my hope is that we don't squander this little gift we got. That we just keep plowing ahead and get to where we need to get. And then in March, took the family on the Durango Silverton train ride. Had never done it in the wintertime. There was snow and water everywhere. It was ridiculous. It was, even the locals were like, wow, this has just been a great year. So, I don't know, if we get 10 more of these in a row, that'd be great. I know it's just a report, but if there are any questions with respect to the report, which we might be able to do.
Yeah, Peter, just a comment. I think I read that same article, and if I remember right, they also have predictions of what the water level, the percentage complete, percentage filled. And I think they started at 25%. This will take them up to 39?
Yeah, it said Mead is now 29, Powell is 24.
Okay.
And it's expected to take both reservoirs to 35.
Yeah, so big jump, but we're still well below half full in the whole system. So
that's good perspective. Like
I said, it's very temporary.
Yeah, but we'll take it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And that concludes my report, and I think
that's it.
The agenda.
Okay. So anybody else have anything for the good of the order? Questions for staff? Anything?
That's a good update, everybody.
Adjourn.
June.
I have a question for you.
Make a motion.
Yep. Her motion to adjourn.
I'll move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank
you, everybody, and have a safe summer and enjoy the vacation. Have a good time. Be safe.
Thank you.
Good luck for your budget meeting.
Maybe we'll see you at the budget meeting.
Yeah.
What time is that?
Five.